Thank you, Brooke. There's a lot of reading in tonight's meeting, lot. And I kind of, God, I wish Jean could just read for me. I'd love to listen to her. I love that accent so much. But you guys are going to have to bear with me. My name is Carrie. I am a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group in beautiful Bend, Oregon, and I'm currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. Back in 11 this week. Didn't do real great on that last week, which is one of the reasons that I hold myself accountable by saying where I am in the steps every time I share. So we are on page 30, no, 31 in More About Alcoholism. And we read through all of the last week drinking, drunk, drank, reading. And so now we're down at the bottom of the page where it's going to tell us how to diagnose ourselves, right? So I'm going to pick up reading right there with before I start reading, I want to give the definition of the word pronounce. The definition in the Big Book Dictionary is to declare or officially or say formally. Okay. So we don't like to pronounce any individual is alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Really? How? Well, here's how. Step up over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. And it may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. Now, I know that some people say this tongue in cheek, right? And you can say this to a newcomer with a condescending air. And that's not ever my intention. But I do believe in what it says today. And I didn't always. My husband's now sponsor used to, actually, he still does say it. Now it just doesn't bother me. But he actually made my fourth step because he was one of the people who tried to told me to go get, go get a bottom. Here's a $20 bill. Go get a bottle. It was a while ago. $20 could have bought something okay back then. And I just thought that was the rudest, most irresponsible. Well, I'm not going to read my fourth step to you, but I definitely didn't agree with his approach. But when I heard it read in the meeting, I'm like, oh my God. Like he used to say things like, I'm a fan of pain. And today I understand I wouldn't have got my sufficient bottom if I didn't allow King Alcohol. It says there's only one, and we'll get there later on in the book, but it says that, frothy emotional appeal isn't going to suffice. There's only one thing that can talk me into a bottom, and that is John Barleycorn, right? That's King Alcohol. And so no amount of listing my yets for me is going to get me to that place of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that I need to get to. And it has to be my own bottom, not somebody else's. And I did get off the elevator a lot sooner than a lot of people, right? I never became physically addicted to alcohol. I don't know what it's like to go through the DTs. I've helped to detox a few people, obviously, in my 12-step work in AA, but I've never had to check myself into detox. I did get off the elevator soon, kind of like the story that hopefully we get to today. So let me get back to the reading. Though there's no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there's yet time. That makes sense, right? It does to me. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here's one. Now they're going to tell us about the carpet slipper guy, and I'm going to insert my own in here because it's my job today to share my experience, strength, and hope with this book, right? Not just to read it to you. So one of the things that I can tell you, I identify with this 100% because way before I got to AA, I did try to quit drinking because an overpowering desire to do so, right? And it says, but the difficulty is that alcoholics have, you know, who have that desire to stop. For me, I started getting physically addicted to alcohol, which is not alcoholism. I'm not talking about an outside issue here. I'm comparing it to real alcoholism. I was probably 22, 23 years old, 23, I think. And I was drinking so often that I was getting physically addicted. And I did start having shakes in the morning. And I thought, oh no, I don't want to turn into an alcoholic. Now, in hindsight, I was already an alcoholic because once I start drinking, I can't stop. I experience that phenomenon of craving, right? And once I stop, I can't stay stopped. But back then, I hadn't gotten to the point where my spiritual condition was had progressed down the scale far enough to where I wasn't getting that second part of the alcoholism yet. Definitely the physical phenomenon of craving was there. I don't ever remember it not being there from in my whole life, right? They say once a pickle, never a cucumber. This alcoholic don't know what it's like to be a cucumber. I just never experienced that. But I, you know, once I start drinking, I can't stop. That's been forever. But I was able to stop for a New Year's. So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm getting physically addicted. That's what an alcoholic is. It's not, but that's what I thought, right? And so I thought I better stop drinking before I become an alcoholic. And so I stopped drinking on a New Year's resolution, right? It was from January 1st. I don't even remember the year, but I was like 23, about to turn 24. And I stopped just on an overpowering desire to do so. And out of necessity, because I didn't want to become an alcoholic, right? And I was getting physically addicted. I don't know if I was there yet. I didn't have to go through detox. But it was, I didn't have to change my people, places, things, nothing. And I stopped for a year because that's what I set out to do. I said, if I could get through a year, then I'm not an alcoholic and I'm no longer, you know, I'm not physically addicted. I'm fine. And so I stopped for a year and I didn't need AA. I still hung out with my friends. Looking back, and I wouldn't have told you this at the time, this is only because of work I've done in AA. Looking back, I could have told you every single day that whole year, how many days left until the end of the year, right? David knows because he did the same thing. It was a 1 year thing just to prove that I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a drinking problem, right? I can stay stopped. And I did because of an overpowering desire to do so. So now let's look at this man that they're going to illustrate. A man of 30, this is on page 32, a man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after those bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but he was where I was, right? He quieted he was nervous in the morning and quieted himself with more liquor. So he was getting that jittery. He was starting to become physically addicted, it sounds like here. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Now I'm assuming because he can't have just one drink, right? That was like me. If I could just have one or two drinks, then that wouldn't have been a problem. But I have this phenomenon of craving that once I start drinking, I get more thirsty instead of quenched for some reason. And I don't stop until I run out, blackout, or pass out. So what this, my highlight is this next sentence. Once he started, he had no control, whatever. Alcoholic. Qualified. There you go. You meet the one thing all alcoholics have in common. So he made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. So this man sounds like he was smart enough. He had full knowledge of his condition, it sounds like, to where he realizes that he couldn't even have one drink, right? Because once he started, he had no control. So he couldn't touch a single drop. And he knew this. So this guy's a pretty smart man. Oh, here we go. That's what the next line says. An exceptional man. He remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age 55. After a successful, happy business career, then he fell victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline, right? I know about self-discipline. I did it for a year and I had 10 days left and 9 days left and 8 days left and 7 days left and bam, right? Because that was the plan. So his self-discipline had qualified him to drink like as other men. That's what he thought. So out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital in the meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. That was my story, too. I thought for the next decade of drinking, now, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever, of drinking. I did it once before. I know I could do it again. I don't need to stop. I can stop whenever I want to because I did it before. Nobody was more surprised than me when I finally stopped because the plan was I was going to stop at 30, right? Nobody was more surprised than me that I couldn't stop. That's when it got really scary. The thought, especially if you're a control freak of my type, that you can control everything and everybody around you, but you can't control not picking up a drink. Scariest time of my life, realizing that King Alcohol had me. Because I was suffering from the delusion that because I remained bone dry for a year, that I could stop again anytime I wanted to. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. This is what happened to me as well. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. Dead within 4 years. This case contains a powerful message, lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We've seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. There's my highlight. I used to actually identify every time I spoke in a meeting, but when I would tell my story, when I'm doing a lead, when I'm the speaker at a speaker meeting, I used to always start by saying, my name is Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. I always have been, and I always will be. I don't do that anymore only because there's nowhere in the literature that will confirm that this thing is has any sort of genetic or whatever. So now, instead of saying I always have been an alcoholic, I say I don't know if I was born an alcoholic, but as soon as I took that first drink, an alcoholic was born. Only because I respect the literature and I know that the literature is what preserves the integrity of the AA message. So I do believe that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic today, but that doesn't mean that I'm any less allergic to alcohol. If somebody put alcohol in my system today, even, and I believe that I'm so hyper sensitive to alcohol that I don't even use mouthwash with alcohol in it, right? Because once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. It don't matter how recovered I am. It doesn't matter how fit my spiritual condition is. I am bodily different than other people, even when I mentally recover from alcoholism. So commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in short time as bad as ever. That was my experience as well. If we were planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind. If we are planning to stop drinking, for those of you who are sponsoring or do 12-step work, right? This will save you a lot of time and effort with those who are kind of still hemming and hawing about this stuff. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. So the word reservation, I really appreciate that word because as Mr. Curtis used to say, reservation is like when you make a reservation at a restaurant for your anniversary or for a birthday dinner or something. You are planning to be there at that time, right? That's what a reservation is. So in the back of my mind, if I know that my out is, if my daughter gets hit by the school bus and gets killed, God forbid, then I'm going to have, you know, I had to have no reservation of any kind. I had to be done drinking for good and for all is what the big book says, right? And when I ask my prospect, do you want to quit drinking for good? And because they'll hear things in meetings like, oh, we just have to quit drinking one day at a time or just for today. And it's like that, homie, don't play that over here. Like if you want big book sober, that's what we're going to do. Are you ready to do this for good and for all? Right. And yeah, that's a tall order, but the desire has to be there or else I'm wasting my time. This is the only place that talks about young people in the book, and I really appreciate it. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that he can stop, as he did, on their own willpower. We doubt if any of them can do it because none of them will really want to stop, right? I mean, I get that. And hardly one of them, because of the peculiar, I sound like Dr. Paul now. That Dr. Paul couldn't say that word either. And I was just listening to that tape the other day. And now I think I'm going to blame him for this. Peculiar mental twist. Dang it. I sound like an idiot. Sorry, you guys. Already acquired. We'll find that he can win out. Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been had been drinking for 20 years. So this is really, I love this paragraph because, you know, if you're a young person coming into AA, I've heard the complaints of people not feeling as included or as some people will give the impression that young people haven't earned their seat, right? And I've heard it said that, hey, I've spilt more than you've drank, right? And then the joke is that the young person turns around and says, well, maybe if you didn't spill so much, you would have got here sooner, right? And I get it, the back and forth and all of the unifying things that we do in the rooms. So to be greatly affected, one does not have to necessarily have drank for a long time, nor take the quantities some of us have. I appreciate this so much because when I was new and I don't know if I could call it sharing, whining in the rooms of AA, and you old timers were sitting there practicing your love and tolerance that I was granting you the opportunity to practice. I was saying things like, well, I don't know if I and where you guys are, right? This is still when I thought that being alcoholic meant that I had to be physically addicted, because by the time I got to AA, I was not physically addicted. I wasn't even a daily drinker. I was a daily quitter. And then I would end up falling off the wagon, staying drunk for a couple of days and quitting again, right? But I wasn't a daily drinker. And I remember looking around, and I must have said it out loud. I must have said it out loud at some point, because I remember Hank cautioning me, but I must have said, I didn't drink for, I don't remember saying it, but I'm sure that I did, because I was thinking it. And anything that I think, you guys know me, it comes out of my mouth anyway. But I remember thinking, okay, so I didn't drink for 40 years like that guy. I am not a daily drinker like she was. I don't drink a case of beer like he does, and a bottle of whiskey to, you know, case of beer to chase down the bottle of whiskey, I think is what the guy used to say. Anyways, I didn't do any of that stuff, right? And so I can't be an alcoholic. And this guy finally says, Hank, he's finally cross-shared. And he said, look, little girl. And he wore a big old huge cowboy hat. I think they call them 10-gallon hats or something like that. He said, it don't matter how long you've been drinking for. It don't matter how much you drink when you drink. And it don't matter how often you drink. The only thing that matters is what happens when you drink. And he took me to this place in the book. And that's what this says, right? It's my reaction to alcohol. Doesn't matter how long I've been drinking for. It doesn't matter how much I drink when I drink. And it doesn't matter how often I drink. It matters what happens when I drink. It's that reaction that sets us apart as a distinct entity that this whole book says and then reiterates and reiterates and reiterates. And it's my job to point that out to my prospect, right? It's my job to point that out to the people that I take through this book. So this is particularly true of women. Wow. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone with beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholic are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try and get them to see it. And everybody's book is going to have a little bit different of an asterisk. The asterisk is going to say a little bit different of a thing. My book, it looks like, was published in 2014. So it says true when this book was first published, but a 2014 U.S. Canada membership survey shows that 1/11 of AA were 30 and under. And I'm sure your book is, some of you guys might have the same one as me, but that asterisk changes with new updates as we do the membership survey. So as we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years. I'm on page 34, beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he's a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there's scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more. That was me. This is my story. Becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, that was me, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. So it's saying before you have this book in your hand, you probably, you might be able to stop for a year or more. Is what the beginning of this paragraph says. But by the time you're seeking out Alcoholics Anonymous's big book, good luck. You might be able to stay sober for a week. I mean, that's how I take it. So I my highlight is some will be drunk the next day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. And that was the case for me, right? Whereas at the beginning of the paragraph, that was me in earlier drinking. I could stay sober for a year. I did it. At the end of my drinking, I couldn't even stay sober for 5 days. It took me 10 months to get my first 30 days sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could stay sober for 2 days, 3 days, sometimes 5 days. After the day after Halloween, I started a sober run. I stayed sober for 23 days, and then I woke up in Mexico. But I was going to a lot of meetings. That's all I was doing, right? I had a big book that I wasn't reading, a sponsor that I wasn't calling, and a home group I wasn't attending, and I was doing the program of As Carrie Sees It, and it ended up me up in Mexico drunk. Some people would say that's a good happy ending. I don't know, depends on who you ask. So for those of you who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop, right? I love that, because what is our one membership requirement? A desire to stop. So if I don't have a desire to stop, I don't fit the one membership requirement. So whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis, like I did for that first year, depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. I hadn't lost the power in my earlier drinking career. By the time I was 30, and the plan was I was going to quit drinking on my 30th birthday and never touch another drop, I had lost the power. I had lost the power to of choice. I'd lost that. I had practically no choice whatsoever. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever. Another highlight, right? Swearing it off forever, with or without a solemn oath. Not trying to stay sober because I need to lose a few pounds, but cease forever. Yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. So this just demonstrated both of the aspects of alcoholism. It demonstrated the physical phenomenon of craving, which is when I start drinking, I can't stop, coupled with the utter inability to leave it alone, even though I want to cease forever. So 1 + 1 = 2, physical plus mental equals you might be an alcoholic. How then shall we help our readers to determine to their own satisfaction whether they're one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we'll describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. So this chapter, more about alcoholism up until this point, remember, has been demonstrating the phenomenon craving. Once we start, we can't stop. The guy with the carpet slippers, right? Who retired, he said, I know I can't, I have no control whatsoever after I start. And now we're going to be talking about the real problem, because if I just had an allergic reaction to alcohol, then it would only be a one-step program. I would only have to admit I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. So maybe I shouldn't drink alcohol anymore. And then I could stop drinking. An allergy, a strawberry allergy, for example, a peanut allergy, for example, a strawberry allergy. I admit that I am powerless over strawberries and that my throat swells up and makes my breathing unmanageable. when I eat strawberries. So I just don't eat strawberries. I'm not really allergic to strawberries. It's an analogy. So I would just not eat strawberries, right? What I wouldn't do with a strawberry analogy is go down to the ice cream shop and watch people eat ice cream and go, well, maybe if I just had a strawberry milkshake with artificial strawberry flavoring, maybe that way I can. No, I don't obsess over it. I just simply don't eat strawberries. I just stay away from the strawberries. Just like peanuts, right? Like, I don't want to play with it. I don't want to say, well, I just don't play with it. And so we don't need, for alcoholics, though, we realize, like Bill did on page 6 of Bill's story, wow. I can't even take one drink whatsoever. I can't, I mean, one drink is too much. I can't stop. And so he swears it off forever. And then he's drunk again. He says, shortly afterward, I came home drunk. So what's the problem there? Well, the crux of the problem is up here. So if I was just physically allergic, then the problem would be solved. However, and this is on page 35, what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? So our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This is the whiskey and the milk guy, right? You guys, this is a fun story. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable world war record. He's a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He's an intelligent man, normal as far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism, and the answer we found, he made a beginning, his family was reassembled, and he begun to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed that he's a real alcoholic, there's a highlight, and in a serious condition. So he knew this, right? He wasn't in denial. He agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family for whom he had deep affection. Yet, he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. Can you imagine? Isn't it funny when somebody comes back in the room and takes another white chip or whatever? Don't you think that they should be annoyed? Well, what happened? Tell me exactly what happened, because I don't want to do it. Thank you for your research. That's what these guys were doing, right? Even back then. Tell us exactly what happened. How did this happen to you? Well, this is his story. I came to work on a Tuesday morning. That's funny right there, right? Not on a Monday morning, because obviously you had a rough weekend. I came to work on a Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. Here's a highlight, and this is a very important highlight, and I'm not going to tell you until the end of the paragraph why. I had no intention of drinking. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten many times. I had eaten there many times during the months that I was sober. I sat down at the table and I ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Another highlight. Still no thought of drinking. Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and I decided to have another glass of milk. Here's another highlight. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey into my milk, it wouldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. Now, notice that the paragraph before, I had no intention of drinking. Still, no thought of drinking. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. That's how quick, for an alcoholic of my type, that it happens. I don't have to be planning the drink. I don't have to have false pretenses. It's all of a sudden that strange mental blank spot, and bam, I'm drunk. That's why I need a recovery program, right? Because he didn't go in that bar with any intention of drinking. And then he says again, still no thought of drinking. Now, the alcoholic insanity in this chapter, and those of you who want to go around quoting me, please quote, because I've gotten myself in trouble here. Please quote this next part that I'm going to say. In this chapter, it's only in this chapter, so that the italics in this chapter are there to demonstrate the insanity of the mind that precedes the first drink, right? So we're going to notice how all the highlights or all of the italics, they're talking about insanity. And then it stops, even in the middle of the paragraph with the italics, once the physical factor has taken over, okay? So he was perfectly sane when he had no intention of drinking, no italics, still no thought of drinking, no italics. Now it's italics. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind. This is the alcoholic insanity. This is alcoholic thinking, the alcoholic mind. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I were to pour an ounce of whiskey into my drink, it wouldn't hurt me on a full stomach. This is insane. This is insane thinking right here. For anybody who doesn't realize, this is absolutely insane. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being too smart. No, it's insane. But felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. That's insane too. Now, he drinks the whiskey. And now there's no more italics on this paragraph, because now he's drinking not because of the anything prior, but he's drinking beyond to escape a physical craving beyond his mental control, right? Doctor's opinion, quote unquote. So the experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey. That's not in italics, because that's not insane. Once I start drinking, that's the physical side of it, right? I'm drinking to overcome a craving beyond my mental control. This is no longer a mental insanity thing. This is the physical allergy. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. This is that once I start, I can't stop. That's why it's not in italics. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. There was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of the intense mental and physical, for those of you who are highlighting mental and physical, physical and mentally, bodily and mind and body, body and mind. There's another two, suffering, which drinking always caused him. Here's another italics, which means this is where he is insane. This demonstrates his insanity. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet he was insane, right? Yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea, insane idea, that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. That is alcoholic insanity. That's why it's in italics. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion, the ability to think straight, be called anything else? You think that this is an extreme case. It's not too far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that, parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking that first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. The next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity, how it could ever have happened again. I used to wake up every morning going, how did this happen again? You could have hooked me up to a lie detector and I would have passed, telling you I am never drinking again. That's the insanity. In some circumstances, we've gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what terrific consequences might be. Our behavior is absurd, as is absurd and incomprehensible with respect to that first drink. There's another highlight, right? Our behavior is absurd and incomprehensible with respect to that first drink. Our behavior that's absurd and laughable and crazy about all of the insane things we do when we're drunk, that's not the insanity, right? Because anybody who consumes as much alcohol as I do when I start drinking is gonna act just as insane. The insane part is that I take that first drink, stone cold sober. That's the insanity of alcohol, the insanity of that first drink, the insanity that precedes that first drink with respect to the first drink. As an individual with a passion for, say, jaywalking. Oh, he gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap, having queer ideas for fun, of fun. Page 38. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he's hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you that he's decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work, his wife gets a divorce, and he's held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day comes, that he gets out and he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? Well, yeah, I have time to read this last paragraph. You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, And this is what Bill said too on page 7 of his story. However intelligent we may have been in other respects where alcohol has been involved, we've been strangely insane. Those of you who are reconciling with me, again, that comes from the doctor's opinion, right? We're just going to go back just real quick. We only have another minute. So the doctor's opinion in the study edition is on page 6XVI. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except for in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. And then page 7 of Bill's story, when he says, it relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects, right? And this is kind of debunking the theory that, oh, I have such an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, I must be an alcoholic. Oh, I had road rage today and I got mad at somebody, I must be an alcoholic. Oh, I like chocolate better than vanilla, I must be an alcoholic. No, we have one thing in common, one thing, and that is that phenomenon of craving once we start drinking liquor. And this says here on page 21, it says the same thing again. Just going to end here with, he is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, right? Page 26, it reiterates, well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. And finally on page 38, however intelligent we may have been in other respects where alcohol had been involved, we've been strangely insane. Insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? So we're going to end there for the night, turning the floor back over to you guys. Thanks.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.